Is there somebody that doesn't mind being an easel?
Being a what?
An easel.
Whatever you need to.
Yeah. Can you stand right there with that placard right there?
Yes, sir.
So thank you, everyone, for joining. My name is Jennifer Farmer. I'm a consultant with Spotlight PR, and I work for Repairers of the Breach and the Poor People's Campaign. The purpose of today's event is to discuss the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, their nine-month, 22-state tour. Today you're going to hear from the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber. You'll also hear from the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris. You'll also hear from Reverend Alvin Jackson. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah, let's bring that a little closer.
Okay. So by way of introduction, and he really needs no introduction, but the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber is president of Repairers of the Breach. He's also a senior theologian at Union Seminary. He's also the national co-chair for the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. The Reverend Liz Theo Harris is the director of the Cairo Center for Religious Rights and Social Justice at Union Theological Seminary. She's also a national co-chair for the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Following their remarks, you'll hear from Reverend Alvin Jackson. Reverend Jackson is the past president of the National City Christian Church Foundation, and we are so thankful to the National Christian City Church for allowing us to gather in this space today. Let me just say that we also have a number of state coordinating committee members who are joining us via Zoom, and at some point we will introduce them throughout this program. If you are following along online and you want to stay connected to the work that we are doing, you can text 90975. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris. Actually, before we introduce our speakers, I want to show a very short video that really highlights why we're doing what we're doing, and it really puts a face on the pain that people living in poverty and people experiencing low wealth are living with daily. They say that if you want people to feel something, you have to take them to the scene of the pain, and so that's what we want to do with this video. Elliot?
Welcome out of this, Houston.
One out of 16 people in Aberdeen are homeless. A lot of people are young. That's something that's...
It is in Canada.
Yeah.
So not a millennial.
Yeah, between 18 and 35.
No healthcare.
Over here, there's a memorial cross where my younger brother died.
He
had a heart attack or a stroke due to freaking pneumonia that he couldn't get to the doctor in time. But we kept trying to get him up here, and every time we set him up there, they sent him back. No antibiotics. Gave him a couple of ibuprofens and said, oh, you get better. That's how they treat people now. He ended up having pneumonia so bad that he caught so hard it caused a stroke. Another thing to open your eyes, this area down here, when men get out of the service, we're overqualified for jobs.
What is overqualified?
What is it? That's their polite way of saying they don't want to take the risk to employ them. We were in charge of $1 million machinery, guns, everything. But we can't flip a burger, wash a car, or...
And you want to.
You know, just to work.
Just to work.
Get back into society, man.
I worked 41 years in the coal mines. I have black lung. And it's just unfathomable what these poor coal miners have to go through in order to get what they have worked for and deserve.
My name is Pamela Rich. I'm from Hounds County, Alabama. And I live in a mobile home with my two kids. And I got raw sewage. I don't have no money on pump. And I had to travel back and forth to Birmingham to take my daughter with the CPAP.
This is Mark
machine.
From Wisconsin.
I don't have a car.
I'm
don't
still
have
not hearing.
Take.
There's a new chemical coming in that's producing another carcinogen. And when you think of that,
I don't think any of us can hear. I know someone's
hearing. On us as people, especially our children, but in our community, it's amazing the people who just started dying of cancer. That became a big fear. And when my wife was diagnosed with cancer, I was amazed at the black women that would ring our doorbell and walk in the door and pull a wig off to show my wife that I have it too. That red stuff you see there?
Yeah,
that's the chemicals, which is primarily mercury. And they dump tons of it in the river. The school over there, directly across the school ground. And we tried to get the government to test that, the earth, the soil in the playground, and they refused to do it.
Now, I'm also a Kansas farmer's wife. Kansas farmers are committing suicide at a far greater rate than the national average. Why? Because they're stressed out. They're stressed out. They're usually in debt up to their eyeballs because they can't pay for all the equipment that it takes to run a farm. And they're in the most dangerous line of work there is, yet many can't afford to buy health insurance. We have no hospital. We are in a food desert. We have one grocery store for the whole county. Our neighbor, my husband's uncle, still drinks pond water self-treated with chlorine. He had to have a kidney removed at age 64. And the year before that, his wife died of some unknown cancer.
We started in a land, Pomo Indian Colony, which when you enter the reservation, before you enter the reservation, it says hazardous area. Enter at your own risk by the county lake of Clear Lake, California. They've been mining mercury since 1957 and have left it open with heavy metal leaking into the water and the land. They stopped fishing in the 1970s and have a high rate of cancer in the community. I worry because I have family, not only just my family there, but the indigenous people in the surrounding communities that are being affected. We talk about health care. We talk about worrying about the environment, but yet when they're allowing open pit mines and letting it leak into the land, into the water, the high rate of cancer and the high bills of health is going to continue to raise because of corporations and greeds and politicians that don't want to listen.
I'm 46 years old. I've lived in poverty here in West Virginia every day of my life. And I'm working. I am working poor with a bachelor's degree. I'm doing the best I can with what I have.
I'm here today to share my daughter's Venus's story. Venus discovered a small lump in her breast. She wasn't insured. Venus had to be approved for every prescription and every piece of medical equipment that she needed. I'm standing here today in solidarity with the Poor People's Campaign because no one should have to bury their child in America because they don't have health care insurance.
This is not right.
Follow that breaking news in Albany, where a large group of protesters have moved into the street.
Washington Avenue between City Hall and Lark Street closed down.
Protesters with the Poor People's Campaign of Indiana.
2 o'clock on the East Coast, 2 o'clock in the middle, 2 o'clock on the West Coast. A wave, and the historians tell us it's never happened before.
Reverend Dr. Liz Thiel Harris.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
It is good to be with everyone today. I am Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, one of the co-chairs of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And I am joined by some of the representatives and leaders of this campaign from some of the coordinating committees that we'll be visiting with on the tour that we're going to be announcing today. So first, so that we know who's really in the room, we have to bring the grassroots leaders in. So I'm going to call out the states. If you're here, say, we're here. And folks should be able to see it up on the screen. We will be traveling to Greenville and Greensboro, North Carolina. North Carolina, are you here?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be going to Portland, Maine, and Manchester, New Hampshire, Louisiana, and Kentucky. Different parts of California and South Carolina, Iowa, and Washington, D.C.
We're
We'll be in Massachusetts and Rochester, New York, Mobile and Selma and Birmingham, Alabama, Little Rock, Arkansas, and Aberdeen and Olympia, Washington. We'll be in Springfield, Missouri. Topeka, Kansas. We'll be in Flint, Michigan. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Dayton, Ohio. Various parts of Pennsylvania. We'll be in Mississippi. Arizona, Nevada, and so many more places. So if we could just give a round of thanks to the powerful leaders from the states that are here. We're the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for more revival. We're the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. So it is great to be here at National City Christian Church, where we held our first Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival teach-in on watch night, just a few weeks before the inauguration of Donald Trump, where we launched the 40 days of Moral Fusion Direct Action, the largest and most expansive wave of nonviolent civil disobedience in the 21st century. And where just a few months ago, in this city, over 1,000 people joined for the first ever Poor People's Moral Action Congress. The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, is shifting the distorted moral narrative that blames poor people for all of society's problems, that feeds us the lie that there's not enough for everyone, and that tries to pit us against each other through race and geography, gender and religion. But our campaign is building power amongst the 140 million poor and low-income people in this country. We are doing what Frederick Douglass suggested: those who would be free must strike the first blow, because those in pain know when their pain is relieved. At our Poor People's Moral Action Congress this June, we launched the Poor People's Moral Budget, Everybody Has a Right to Live, where policymakers and researchers, theologians and impacted folks did the research to show that if we have a fair taxing system, if we cut our military budget and make this country and the world a whole lot more secure, and if we invest in education and healthcare and living wages and strong social programs, that we can improve the life of hundreds of millions of people. When we lift from the bottom, everybody rises. At that Congress, we held the largest presidential candidates forum in this election season, where all of the front runners and others were posed questions by impacted folks. And we challenged, and we heard that those folks accepted our challenge to have a debate, a nationally televised debate, on the 5 interlocking injustices of systemic racism and poverty, ecological devastation, militarism and the war economy, and this distorted moral narrative. At that Congress, we then testified before the House Budget Committee, bringing stories and solutions from the real heroes and heroines of this country. We shared examples from our budget that if we were to transition to automatic online voter registration, it would just cost $150 million per year for 5 years, which is less than the $173 million the top two individual political donors contributed in the 2016 elections. We shared that a $15 an hour federal minimum wage enacted immediately would raise the pay for 49 million workers by a combined $328 billion per year. Or a $22 an hour, 83 million workers would get a trillion more in pay. These kinds of raises dwarf the $7.1 billion tax cut bonuses employers gave U.S. workers in 2018. We showed we can do better. We can do more when poor people and moral leaders and advocates and activists and organizers get together and build power from the bottom. When we testified before Congress, we heard our politicians respond with the same tired stereotypes and lies about the inevitability of poverty, about the lack of social responsibility, government responsibility for the poor, and with theological, biblical justification for low wages and anti-poverty cuts. But this and all the work our leaders are doing across 43 states and Washington, D.C. in this country has just emboldened us. As Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King says, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth must be told. Power for poor people will really mean having the ability, the togetherness, the assertiveness, and the aggressiveness to make the power structures of this nation say yes when they may be desirous to say no. Well, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, is developing that ability, that togetherness, that assertiveness, and some real aggressiveness. And Washington, D.C., we are coming back to prove it.
Let me, as always, thank our co-chair, the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, for her tremendous leadership. She is a leading scholar and activist with degrees in New Testament, focusing on what the Bible says about economics, and the director of the Kairos Center at Union Theological Seminary. She is my sister, beloved, and it is truly an honor to do this work together with her. Today we've come to make a big announcement and about the We Must Do More, mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating people for the Movement Who Vote tour that will lead to the mass and historic mass poor people's assembly and moral march on Washington, June 20, 2020. It has never been done this way before. When poor people and their allies and all come, I'm going to talk some about what we will do on that day. But in order to get this done and get this moving, we brought on someone to be our modern-day Bayard Rustin to some degree, to make sure, particularly for the mass poor people's assembly part of it and the moral march on Washington. And it's none other than Reverend Dr. Alvin Jackson, a former pastor of Mississippi Boulevard Church, former pastor of National City Church, former pastor of Park Avenue Church, but who is known around the country as one who is a tremendous administrator, forward-thinking, and visionary. And before I make my comments to the press, I want to invite and have you to welcome publicly Reverend Dr. Alvin Jackson.
Thank you, Pastor Barbara. I'm a native of the Mississippi Delta. one of the poorest areas in this country, if not the poorest. And 21 years ago, I came to Washington, D.C. from Memphis, Tennessee, to serve as senior pastor of the congregation that gathers each week in this place, and to serve as president of the National City Christian Church Foundation. It is with great joy and excitement that I return to this very familiar place to serve now as National Executive Director of the Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington, June 20, 2020. I was fully retired from active ministry, but at the invitation of the Reverend Dr. Barbara and the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, I'm happy to join the Poor People's Campaign team, and over the next 9 months to join hands with the team and many others across the country in mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating, and supporting the national We Can Do More bus tour and a series of major Moral Mondays along the route of the bus tour, all leading to the Mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March. If we ever needed an assembly and march like this, we need it now to prick the conscience of the nation, to picture the faces and places of the poor, to present to the nation pain and policy, not 40 million, but 140 million people living in poverty in this country. The principal speakers at the assembly in March next year will come from those 140 million poor and impacted people, addressing the five big interlocking evils and injustices. Everything we say must and can be done. We just need moral courage and the political will to do it. The Reverend Rob Stevens will be serving as deputy director of the assembly in March, and we'll be reaching out to state coordinating committees, partners, friends, allies around the country, churches, temples, mosques, religious and non-religious leaders, groups, unions, fraternities, sororities, social clubs, community groups, urban and rural communities, young and old, white and brown, the LGBTQ community, immigrants and native-born, and we especially need those of you in the Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, the Mid-Atlantic region, to serve as hosts for the thousands we expect to come. We need everybody. National City Christian Church has generously and graciously opened its doors and made space available to us for offices and meeting space. Within the next month, by October 1st, the office will be fully staffed here, and there will be persons to answer questions and support our preparations for the assembly and march. Why are we doing this? In the words of Pete Seeger, everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we're all going to go down to jail because everybody's got a right to live. And so we say forward together.
Not one step back.
Forward together.
Not one step back.
Thank you so much, Reverend Dr. Jackson, and Rob, I want you to stay up here with us. I want to now also make sure that on the back you see the stops for the tour that will lead to June 20th. I want to invite this powerful team of national organizers that we have in the room to come up now who cover various areas across this country. I want to invite our political director to come, Shally, Sharon, as I feel, and our arts, all of the staff team that will come. I want to also invite other clergy to come at this time to stand with us and others who hold in placards to come and just gather around. Just try not to be in front of the map, in case Eric pans. And then I want to also say that as a part of this tour that we'll be having, an additional part of it is the producer of The Amazing Grace, the film about the album that Aretha Franklin did in 1972. Alan Elliott is here, and the film is going to do some traveling with us in communities to help bring people out and to help them come out and be a part of building power and registering people to vote. And really, if you look at that film, the first song that Aretha sings on that film is about Holy, Holy. It is a song, I think, that Cook, was it Sam? Who was it? Marvin Gaye first did, but it's about we must come together.
And it is so prophetic that in 72 she was saying that she passed last year, and that this film about that those songs of gospel, but also to hear that voice. And Aretha was on the original program. Come on up, Alan. Well, in the original program, they had a program on the 19th called the Day of Solidarity. Mahalia Jackson sang first, and Aretha Franklin sang second, and Reverend Dr. Abernathy preached in the middle because Martin Luther King had been killed. And Aretha's father preached the opening sermon when the Poor People's Campaign first came here, from the story of Nebuchadnezzar and how we cannot bow down to tyrants and those who promote injustice. If any of you coming up now, the rest of you that got placards, come on up and stand with us. Come on up and stand around. And Liz, come on. So the goal of this campaign has and shall always be, Robin, come on, you, unless you're doing something you need to be doing. Okay. Some folks, some staff are doing something they need to be doing. I don't always know what that is, so I'm going to be quiet. Okay. Just make sure he can see the map. The goal of this campaign is to shift the moral narrative in this nation by building power with and among America's 143 million poor and low-wealth people. That's 43.5% of this nation. Poverty is a moral issue. Budgets, policies are moral issues. Moral issues are not just emotional issues. Moral issues are policy issues. And you cannot address the crisis of poverty and low wealth and try to separate that from addressing systemic racism, ecological devastation, the war economy, militarism of our communities, and the distorted moral narrative of religious nationalism. They form an interlocking injustice system that disables us from addressing the issue of poverty and low wealth. Now, an extreme minority in this country has conspired to blame the poor for their plight in order to distract from the real immorality that 250,000 people die every year. That's over 600 people a day from the effects of poverty. Some, as Liz said, have even gone so far, which is strange to us, to say things like, well, Jesus never corrected Caesar, to which we say, so you are calling yourself Caesar? I mean, to me, that is a greater problem, Graylin, in the American reality, that politicians equate themselves with Caesar. Caesar, who catered to the 1% and allowed and called everyone else the dregs of the city. This campaign is inviting people of every race, creed, and sexual orientation and culture to come out of the shame that has kept them in the shadows, to come out as poor and low wealth impacted people, and to come together as a new intersectional moral force determined to fight poverty, not fight poor people and low wealth people. Moral analysis, moral articulation, and moral action is what we need. It has always been the way that our country has been transformed. And so today, after 2 years of establishing coordinating committees, and I want the media to hear that we build from the bottom up. We have now more than 43 coordinating committees in 40 states and the District of Columbia. As Liz just said, Theo Harris said, we had the largest mass of a wave of civil disobedience and sit-ins in 2018. Some say, because it was simultaneous and in state capitals across the country, it was totally historic in what it did. In El Paso, Texas, we've been invited by the people there who have just suffered through the kind of violence, physical violence, that always happens when you spread the violent words of racism and the violent policies of white nationalism. And they have said to us, we would love for you to come to El Paso to launch this 25-state tour. They have said to us that they do not want white nationalism to only be seen when there are deaths and people are killed, as horrific as that is. But they want to be clear about how white nationalism can be identified in voter suppression, can be identified in the fight against health care and living wages and the attacks on immigrants and the refusal to have a just immigration system and the militarization of our communities. And it can also be detected in the false moral narratives that try to justify injustice by wrongfully using religious language to do so. Now, we are calling this tour, and I want to be very clear for those online who are listening and the media is there, welcome to you. We must do more. If you listen at that, it is not defensive, it is offensive. It's time to stop being defensive and go on the offense. We, it's not so much what the extremists are doing, right? It's not so much what others are doing, but we, our poor people, our leaders, and their allies, we must do more. And MORE is an acronym for mobilizing, organizing, registering, and educating people for the movement who vote. Mm-hmm. This is not just a voter registration tool. It is a building power among poor and low impacted people and their moral leaders and registering people for the movement who vote. Because we are nonpartisan but very political. We understand we must vote in 2020 and every election, but we also know this nation needs a movement. Yeah. A transformative movement that will not only go to the polls, but will organize in the streets and the legislative streets, particularly in state capitals and other places, to see transformation. Yeah. And this campaign is being done with most people who are most impacted by systemic justice. We believe in the agency of those who have been impacted. We are not a campaign doing for people. We are a campaign doing with people. And we know that in order to challenge the five interlocking injustices, we must have an intersectional moral movement to address the crisis of this time. We know the stats, and we spent 3 years waking people up, waking them up to the fact that there's 140 million poor people, waking them up to the fact that there are 40 million more white, poor, and low-wealth people than there are African-American, even though African-Americans represent 60-some percent of African-Americans are impacted by poverty. Waking them up to the fact that there are 37 million people without health care. Waking them up to the fact that there's not a county in this country where you work a minimum wage job and you can afford a two-bedroom apartment, even if you work plus 40 hours a week. We've been waking people up to the fact that there are 62 million people who are low wealth, poor and low wealth, who work every day for less than a living wage. We've been waking people up to the reality that there are 4 million families who every day get up and can buy unleaded gas and can't buy unleaded water. We've been waking people up that those who will be devastated the most by climate change are poor and low wealth communities. We've been waking people up with the facts and the anecdotal stories to the fact that that we are putting so much money in this military machine and war economy that people are making a killing off of killing. We've been waking people up that just one contract that we give to a defense company could fully fund Medicaid expansion for all 14 states that have denied it. And we've been waking people up to the false moral narrative that suggests that if you're against gay people and against abortion and for prayer in the school and for guns and for tax cuts to the wealthy, that somehow that is a godly a theology and a godly philosophy. But, as the song that was written in tribute to Nina Simone said, it's not the waking, it's the rising. Yeah. Yes. That's right. It's not enough to be woke, because you can be awoke and still in bed. That the waking must lead to something. It must lead to something that is willing to stay engaged long term for nonviolent change. We must do more to register people for the movement who vote. Now let us be clear, as I prepare to conclude. We do not believe that any single party or any one candidate can address this crisis alone. That's right. Every moral movement that has successfully pushed this nation toward a more perfect union has been led by the agency of directly impacted people and their allies who organize from the ground up to shift the moral narrative so that those in power, whatever their party or political philosophy, had to address the immorality of slavery, the immorality of child labor, the immorality of denying women the right to vote, the immorality of racial segregation. It has always been a movement that has changed either the context of the political reality or the political players, but one way or the other, it's always been a movement. We are not another new organization, but an organism. We are inviting people to come together. There must be a place sometime when all of us in these various areas, whether it be racism, ecological devastation, and whatnot, can find our way to each other and be of power. This is a campaign to challenge the immorality of poverty and to challenge those who think it's all right. To challenge those who do the macroeconomics of saying everything is all right on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But the macroeconomics of Wall Street does not give us clarity about the microeconomics of back street and back roads and hurting communities. The people who are with us, moral leaders and impacted people who, as Fannie Lou Hamer said, are sick and tired of being sick and tired and being blamed for the conditions that make them sick and tired in the richest nation in the world. So we're going on this tour to the poorest communities in America to put a face on poverty. Yeah. So it's not just about numbers. And we're inviting the media to go with us. It's not enough to say that there are 43% of Americans are poor and low wealth. We must lift up their stories. We must say their names. We invite the media to come and listen. We invite the media to send out this video we show today. We invite you to do that. So from El Paso, Texas, to Greenville, North Carolina, we will highlight deep organizing in 22 to 25 of the 43 states where communities have come together to register people for the movement who vote. It is time to show this on our networks and this in our newspapers rather than the constant narcissistic raving of the current occupant of the White House. And this is not merely about protest. Yes, we have protested injustice, but we've also studied the problems and found real solutions. Yeah. Poor and impacted people across this nation have worked closely with some of the best economists and public policy analysts to produce a moral budget. And we want to thank the IPS, who's here today, and all the great work they have done with so many others. We know how we can address poverty and low wealth. We know how we can pay for it. On each stop of this tour, we will canvass communities so neighbors can educate neighbors about the campaign. We will mobilize for public action in the community so that people can stand together to create a platform to be heard, to be heard. Each of our state coordinating committees now is working to connect and engage and train 30,000 people, impacted people, moral activists through various means, including social media. The goal is to have 30. When that is completed, we will have over 1 million people who are connected to this campaign one way or the other and who are prepared to engage their communities in 2020 and beyond. We have identified areas all over the country where if just 2% of poor and low wealth people and their allies are organized, it changes the political calculus. We know where those pockets are, and we know we can make a huge electoral difference. For instance, in North Carolina, where I'm from, in North Carolina Senate race some years ago, Tom Tillis won that statewide by 30,000 votes, but less than 50% of the vote, the first time ever in the history of North Carolina, after having pushed through the state house voter suppression measures that now the courts have undone and said it was targeted racism with surgical precision. We don't have to endorse or not endorse. What we have to do is simply say where people stand on the issues and allow people to know that, and they will make the decision. And what we know, for instance, about North Carolina, these states, North Carolina, southern states, are not red states, so necessarily blue. That many times they are unorganized states. They are states that have not been focused on. For instance, over 500,000 African Americans alone didn't vote in that Senate race. And that particular senator only won by 30,000 votes. There are 4 million low-wealth people in North Carolina. More poor and low-wealth people in North Carolina than actually people who voted. 1 million without health care. If they can mobilize and see together who is not supporting living wages, health care, voting rights, they can shift the conversation and they can change their own representation. The same is true in Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell is. I'm not endorsing or not endorsing. I'm just talking about what the facts are. Mitch McConnell won his last Senate race by about 220,000 votes. We've been in Kentucky and Harlan County, not to endorse, but to talk about issues. Did you know there are over 2 million Kentuckians who are poor and low wealth? 270,000 who are uninsured. 872,000 people make less than a living wage. That means there are 500,000 more people that make less than a living wage than the margin of his victory. In the poorest communities in their country, there are people who've gotten elected with a false moral narrative, and then they aren't standing up for the people they represent most.
Yeah, that's right.
We must do more to mobilizing, organizing, registering, and educating people for the movement that will vote. And when we go to these faces, we're putting a face on the real issue. So finally, we're going to these states for the next 9 months, Liz, to mobilize, to organize, to register, to educate. And then, Reverend Dr. Jackson, we're inviting people from everywhere to join us on June 20th, 2020. Why June 20th? It's right after the primaries. We know who all the people are. It's before the conventions, Democrat and Republican. And we are calling for a mass, I want you to get the name, media, mass poor people's assembly and national moral march on Washington. We're coming back to demonstrate our collective power and to demand that the agenda of this campaign inform the platforms of both parties' conventions. If you want people to vote for you, then let them hear their names, their condition, and that you care about them. We need serious debate on one stage about systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, militarization of our communities, and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism. This campaign, to build a movement, we unite those who've been rejected. And we, Liz, have said we cannot have another season of electoral politics like we had in 2016. And when we say that, we're not even talking about the personalities. We're talking about the fact that we had 26 presidential debates in this country, Grayling, 26. And despite the fact that we got 43% of this country poor and low wealth, and in some ways we have less voting rights than we have since 1965, and every state that is a voter suppression state, the people who get elected through voter suppression pass policies that hurt the poor and hurt the sick. And most of the people that they hurt after having benefited from racist voter suppression are white. And we had 26 presidential debates and not one debate on poverty, not one on systemic racism, not one on living wages. We can't have that. When our political discourse devolves in that direction and is limited in that way, then we can only expect to get what we've got. But if we can show this country that the same people that are rejecting the cries of those impacted by policy systemic racism are the same people rejecting the cries of the LGBT community, are the same people rejecting the cries of those who need public education and access to college, are the same people that are rejecting the cries of those who need health care and living wages, are the same people rejecting the cries of immigrants, are the same people rejecting the cries of our Native brothers and sisters on reservations, the same people who are rejecting the hurting of this country. If we can show people that if all of those come together, they can fundamentally shift the American project. Then, perhaps we can have a little bit more of what it means to be a more perfect nation. Mm-hmm. And this is why we are launching today the We Must Do More tour leading to the Mass Poor People's Assembly and the Moral March on Washington, June 20th, 2020. Thank you. Are there questions for Liz or I or Reverend Jackson? Yes, sir.
Greg Coffin with the Nation. In some ways, having followed the campaign from the start, you all have done a ton of mobilizing and organizing, educating and registering for a couple of years now.
You all need to sit down. You can.
And so in what ways does this mark a different moment from what you've been doing, building, mobilizing, organizing,
right? Well, I think it's not, we would say it's not a different moment, but we always knew when we started we were building for the long haul.
That's right.
So you hear me say we're political, we may not be partisan. We also know that in this moment, while things were bad already, 2016, 2017, we had made the decision we were going to do this campaign regardless of who became president, regardless of who was in the Senate. But we've seen an exacerbation of extremism and attacks. We've seen, attacks bill passed that basically robbed poor and low-wealth people and gave money to the wealthy or the greedy in ways that we haven't seen money taken from the backs of working people in a way that we have not seen done since slavery. In some ways, we've seen more money transferred from the poor and low-wealth community than was transferred through slavery. We've seen the increase in militarization. We've seen an all-out attack to take the little bit of health care people have. We've seen, a Senate block even having a debate on living wages and discussing it. We've seen, a Supreme Court justice be appointed, and everybody keeps talking about the abortion issue, but what they're not looking at is how those justices favor the wealthy, favor the business community. We've seen vast deregulation of communities, deregulation not of communities, but of polluters. And we are now post-2,000 days since the Voting Rights Act has been gutted and could have been fixed. Post-2,000 days. And I always say that when Strom Thurmond filibustered the Civil Rights Act of 57, we called him a racist. McConnell has filibustered or engaged in interposition and nullification for over 2,000 days. And we are in this time even in which we are now talking about racism, but too often the conversation is about words and not the works, the policies of racism. And so people will quickly call Trump a racist, which is true, but they call him a racist based on words, not based on policies, and then many times don't look deeper at the policies, which by a policy definition, there are a whole lot of people, if they're not racist, they certainly are the enablers of racist policies. And then very few make the connection that racism is not just against black folk, but against democracy itself. And that what happens is many of the people that are promoting systemic racism, i.e. voter suppression, more mass incarceration, attack on immigrants, that's what we mean by systemic racism, are the same folk blocking health care and living wages. So in this moment, if it wasn't clear, it was clear to us in 2016, but if it wasn't clear to everybody else, it's kind of clear now. that's one of the sides of this moment, that the extremism that we're seeing, the attacks that we're seeing day in and day out, has made it glaringly clear that poor and low-wealth people and people of moral agency and their allies must come together, yes, engage in 2020, but also build the moral will of the country beyond 2020 for transformational change. And we've got one shot to do it, I believe, one real shot to do it. Because if we cannot, if this country cannot embrace a moral narrative in this moment of gross immorality, then God help us as a nation.
Right. Yeah. I want to add one other piece to what I think is important about this, the work that the Poor People's Campaign and National Call for Moral Revival is doing in this moment. And I want to turn everyone's attention to when Reverend Dr. Barber said one of the themes of this tour is it's not the waking, it's the rising, right? And I want folks to know that this tour is about bringing the solutions and building the power to enact those solutions and demands.
That's right.
So as to be able to really save the heart and soul of this democracy and of this nation, right? And so I think to us it's so important that this tour will surely raise all of the injustices that are happening and put a face, put names, put places, put geographies on those problems. And it will show that out of those very places, the solutions to the problems that the whole country, the whole world is seeing are coming out, and that as poor people and as moral leaders and as others link arms and join a movement and build from the bottom up, that we are able to then enact the solutions that are already out there. And what we've seen is that, you know, through this massive wave of nonviolent civil disobedience, through the organizing and educating that the state coordinating committees are doing all across this country, we have begun to break through. Folks are talking about the 140 million poor and low-income people in a way that, you know, 2 years ago folks weren't. People are talking about the moral issues of our day being living wages and health care and education in ways that 2 years ago people weren't. There are folks that are coming forward with different plans and proposals and legislation that is informed by powerful movements on the ground in ways that a couple years ago that wasn't happening. And that is the power of people organizing. And so what this tour is about is building that organizing and power even more for this moment when so much is at stake, so that we ready ourselves for 2020 and beyond, because we know that when we win some of our demands, when we enact the power of poor people, we are just going to be able to keep on winning and winning. And to us, this is such an important moment.
It's very important. I think, Liz, and lastly, that you listen now at some of the national debates. You're starting to hear candidates talk about morals,
yeah.
Right? You know, candidates talking about, I heard one say systemic racism. First time I'd heard a candidate say that. I heard one or two say, they said the word poor. Not just middle class, right? They said the word poor. And I think that they're very serious. Understand, we never intended to be a flash in the pan. You know, now we have over 120 other organizations. We're going to have a big press conference later where we're going to bring all of them together, 120-some organizations that are supporting 43 coordinating committees in states, 10 or 12 different religious bodies. And the uniqueness of being able to do that without people getting caught up in turf wars, because we are teaching people how these injustices interlock and how we can hold on to our silos, but every now and then we need to do some things outside of our silos together. And we're finding great hunger for this in this moment, because we are really in a time. Let me say it like this. Any nation that has 43% of its people living in poverty and low wealth and does not see and does not make that a central issue of discussion is a nation in deep crisis. Any nation that sees civil rights advances like voting rights rolled back 50 years after they were rolled forward, is in deep moral crisis. Any nation where politicians would protect a corporation greater than they will protect their grandchildren, because that's what you're doing when you deregulate polluters.
Right.
I mean, if you really push that, you can't, somebody has to ask you, do you care about your posterity?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Any nation that would put the kind of money we're putting into militarization and the war economy in ways that means even if folks like Iran and China and Korea combine their military budgets, we would still be more than theirs. And anytime you have people using religion to justify injustice and use religion to stifle critique of the government, we are in deep moral crisis. Now, but you can't just curse the darkness. And that's the difference about this movement. There is a place in which you have to show the country the nightmare. But then any real movement, moral movement, has to also show that nation a way out and the possibility forward. And that's why we develop the Souls of Poor Folk audit, but also that everybody has a right to live moral justice budget. And now it's time to take it on the road and bring it to the nation's capital and put it before the nation. Any more? We want to thank all the people online. Thank AP for being online today. We understand there are other media sources. And tonight at the Kennedy Center, what time?
6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock at the Kennedy Center. There's going to be a gathering there with Amazing Grace and Richard Smallwood and the Gospel Singers, but we're going to have a forum prior to that talking about the connection between music and the movement because we're calling on everybody. We're calling on actors and all to join in. When you come here next year on June 20th, the people speaking will be impacted. We need folk to come and make up the audience and make up the crowd and be able to stand with them. Because we are not going to turn this stage over to people speaking on behalf of folk who are impacted. It's time for the people to speak themselves, right? And so we're inviting people, everybody to come, and let's mobilize in an awesome and powerful and mighty way. And join us on these tours across the country. Amen?
Amen.
Thank you all. Where y'all headed? Oh, the media's still on.